Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, whether you are a dog lover or not, I think you're going to love today's book. It's called Poppy in the Wild, A Lost Dog, 1,500 Acres of Wilderness and the Dogged Determination That Brought Her Home. My guest is Teresa Ryan, and she's known as the pack leader of heartfelt, funny, original dog memoirs. The book is described by the New York Times as a tale of love and devotion, defying all odds, and it certainly does. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest, and we'll bring her straight on. She is Teresa J. Ryan. She is the number one New York Times, number one Wall Street Journal, and USA Today bestselling author of The Dog Lived, and So Will I, and its sequel, The Dogs Were Rescued, and So Was I, which was awarded the Pat Santi Memorial Friend of Animals Award by the Dog Writers Association of America. She was awarded the Albert Schweitzer Humanitarian of the Year by the Riverside Humane Society Pet Adoption Center. And again, we're talking today about her latest book, Poppy in the Wild, A Lost Dog, 1,500 Acres of Wilderness, and the Dogged Determination That Brought Her Home. And here's my guest, Teresa Ryan. Teresa Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. Glad to be here.
I'm so pleased to have you because I'm such... Everyone who listens to the show regularly knows I'm such a dog person. And this is such a lovely book, Teresa. You should be very proud of it. The New York Times describes it as a tale of love and devotion, defying all odds. And it certainly is. It's beautifully written. It's poignant. It's funny. I loved that your sense of humor shone through here. I think you probably needed it to keep you going.
Well, thank you for all of that. And yes, definitely. The humor kind of, I write about, you know, I jokingly say I write about tragedies that happen to me and my dogs, but always with happy endings. And dark humor is kind of how I get through life and bad things. And so that's, I write with a lot of humor as well. So yeah. Thank you for acknowledging that. I'm glad you thought it was funny.
Yes, definitely. And the book is called Poppy in the Wild. It's about a dog you were fostering who gets lost. And I want to definitely jump into that in a moment. But I'd just like to share a little bit more about you with our listeners since this is the first time we've talked. And I want to go back a few years in time. The book starts out as you're in the car and you're describing your journey as you're driving home. You put in quotes the word home, and you say that's a very difficult concept for you, or it was at that time. Lots of chaos in your younger life, lots of step-siblings, lots of houses, and then that kind of continued. How did that those early years shape you, Teresa?
Well, I think your early years shaped me because, as you mentioned, so much moving around and the families changed a lot. My parents divorced and remarried a lot, and so there was, in that sense, a lot of instability. But the one bit of stability in my life was always dogs. My whole family is dog lovers, and we always had dogs in our life. And I had one dog, Tippy, who he was a Christmas gift for me when I was 7 years old, and he passed away in my second year of law school. So that is literally my entire childhood that I had this dog with me. So that was my sense of home. Wherever that dog was, that was my home. And that, I think, has definitely carried on in my life. So dogs are home to me.
Right. And you're a practicing lawyer. You have been for many years now. You said at one point you got to the point, I think it was after your second divorce, where you thought, okay, I just want to, you know, get my little house and sit here with my coffee and my books and my dogs. But then that changed when you met Chris, right?
Yeah, I had this idea that, you know, I was good at a lot of things in life, but maybe relationships weren't one of them. So I set out to live this life with, I called it my alphabet life, my books and coffee and dogs, the B, C, D. And then a friend pointed out to me that I wasn't going to get very far without wine. So we added adult beverages. So I had my A, B, C, D life, adult beverages, books, coffee, and dogs. And, you know, best laid plans always go astray, right? The world always intervenes. And I wound up meeting someone. He happened to be 12 years younger than me. And we've been dating for over 16 years now.
Dating. I love it. And he's into wine too, right? Sommelier.
Oh, yeah. That's his business and his background. So, that worked out perfectly.
And so I also read that over the years you've owned 9 beagles. So let's talk a minute about beagles and what makes beagles so special in your heart, because they're a very unique kind of dog.
Yeah, I often say beagles are, you know, you either love them or just don't understand it at all.
Right.
Because they are very unique and they are very very special dogs. I also tell people, if you're going to get a beagle, you need to have a good sense of humor, because they are going to outsmart you and you're going to have to learn to laugh, or you're just going to be entirely frustrated. So Chris often says that a beagle is just a nose and a stomach on 4 paws. So they're all nose, they're all stomach, and that will get them into trouble. But I happen to find them absolutely adorable. I love their happy-go-lucky personalities. I love how just indefatigable they are. They're just so energetic and happy, and I like that in them. So it's just always been, I first fell in love with beagles. I had an uncle in Georgia who raised beagles, probably for hunting, but I was a kid, I didn't realize that then. And I just fell in love on a visit, and to me they're just like this perfect little ball of fur when they're puppies. They're like the perfect looking puppy. Mm-hmm. And like I said, such happy personalities that the moment I was able to get a dog on my own, which was shortly after my childhood puppy Tippy passed away, a year later I graduated from law school and moved out into the world on my own and got my very first beagle. That was beautiful. 30 plus years ago.
Well, I mentioned before we started talking that I had a beagle in my teenage years, and he would go horse riding with me every night. He'd come down to the farm with me to feed my horse and ride. And you could never wear him out, I swear. But when we were all at school and my parents were at work, he'd break out of the house no matter how my dad tried to keep him in the garden. He'd break out and he'd go down to the farm, and he'd call on the little kids who lived there to play with, and then he'd come home for tea.
He knew where he was, and he came back. Yeah, that is the other thing about them, is they will follow their nose, and they will get out and escape if you let them, or if you don't even mean to do it on purpose. Just they will find a way out, so they do have to be watched pretty carefully.
Right. Now, you had great success. I think it was with your first book, if I'm correct, but you found out your dog had cancer. And then you found out you had breast cancer, and you kind of went through this together. And that was that your first book?
That was The Dog Lived and So Will I. So the dog got diagnosed first, and that was really my first experience with cancer. I didn't have any friends or family at the time that had been through cancer, and I don't even think I was really aware the dogs could get cancer. But they can, of course. Unfortunately, it's on the uprise with dogs. So I jokingly refer to that book as everything I needed to know to survive cancer I learned from my beagle, because he went through it first, and then I just followed his lead.
Yeah. And then you went through it again with another dog called Daphne. It is on the rise in dogs, it seems. My dog just had major surgery to remove a tumor, too. I have a border collie now. And I don't know why that is, whether it's the foods or what we're spraying on the ground, but it seems to be prevalent these days.
Yeah, probably all of the above, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about why you started fostering versus, you know, owning. Why did you start fostering in the first place?
Well, I think I've been so also involved in rescue, and I do a lot of volunteer work with a variety of different rescue groups, and I know how important fostering is because, you know, the shelters can only hold so many dogs, and even the rescues can only have so many dogs, and if people can take a foster dog into their home even for a short-term period, that really helps rescue and save more dogs. And when I lose a dog, I always feel, you know, it's so painful to lose a dog, and I like most people, I think, okay, I'm not ready to you know, possibly break my heart again. But on the other hand, I don't like being without a dog, so maybe I'll just foster for a little while and help that dog and help my heart heal, and then, you know, the dog can move on and be adopted, and when I'm ready, I'll adopt the right dog. That's always my thinking. I usually fail and end up adopting the dog I'm fostering.
Well, that would be my thinking, you know, because I've been asked to foster before, and I said, oh my gosh, I could never give it away. I just can't do it.
Yeah. I have been able to do it for, you know, often I will, because I live in two different places. So I live in Southern California and Central California. So I drive back and forth a couple of times a month. And so often I will have an extra rescue dog with me who needs to be transported, you know, from one place to the other place, or at least on the route. Like, I will pick up a dog on Monday that needs to be is come across from Texas and is going all the way up to somewhere in Northern California, and I'm two legs of that transport. So that doesn't quite count as fostering. That's more transport, but sometimes he will stay overnight with me. If he'll come into one town, I'll pick him up. He'll stay overnight with me, and I'll be the early morning leg the next day. That I can do because there's already a plan. So,
right.
And this is a four-month-old Rottweiler puppy. So I will no doubt fall in love with him, but there's already a plan in place and I can move him along.
Right. That's the thing. They have a good home at the other end.
Yeah.
Let's talk about why fostering from China, because, you know, it seems we have a ton of dogs here that are in shelters, and you know, my dog had four owners before I found him. I've now had him 13 years, but at the age of two when I adopted him, he'd been through four owners already. So why China? Because I know a lot of people are doing this, and, you know, with good reason, but tell me your perspective on that.
Yeah, so Poppy came from China. She was rescued from the dog meat trade over in China, and she was rescued by an organization called Beagle Freedom Project. And Beagle Freedom Project rescues, they started in rescuing animals, mostly beagles, who had been tested on in laboratory. So they, after the whatever the experiment is done, the laboratories generally euthanize the dogs, so Beagle Freedom Project is trying to work with the laboratories to get them to release at least the dogs that survive and have a chance at a good quality of life. So one of our dogs, Percival, actually came from Beagle Freedom Project from a laboratory, and we got him about, I think, 7 years ago now. And it just so happened that shortly after Daphne had passed away, I saw a post from Beagle Freedom Project that they had gotten involved in bringing these 13 beagles over from China who'd been, like I said, rescued from the dog meat trade. And I can't say I, you know, carefully thought it through. I just saw these faces and I was like,
right.
I need another dog. I'm going to foster one of these dogs. And so, and they look for fosters and adopters who have experience with these sort of traumatized dogs when you get them. So I said I would foster one when they came over. Beagle Freedom Project still mostly is rescuing from laboratories, but they partnered with a group that was over in China trying to stop the dog meat trade. And that's kind of its own high urgency, because if the dogs aren't saved, they literally are killed in very horrific ways. So
yeah, I know several people up here in Seattle who do the same thing. There is an organization up here, Seattle Beagle Dog Rescue, I think it's called. And I know several people who've fostered and adopted from them. So it's not always easy to foster a dog, though. And beagles are a unique dog, as we said before, because they're so highly intelligent. And often they've gone through such trauma in their lives. I don't know if this is still true, but certainly when I was a kid and we had our beagle, they were the dog that was used most in science and medical experiments.
Because
still true.
About 70,000 a year.
Yeah, because they're like the purest bred, I understand, and they don't have a lot of disease in them. So yeah, they go through such horrors there. It's good for people to be aware of that, because, you know, there may be challenges there, but the rewards are exponential.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they were both challenging dogs, Percival and Poppy, but not in any way that I would at all, you know, regret fostering and adopting them. You know, they're not, you know, they haven't been socialized, and they haven't, they're fearful of humans because their experience with humans hasn't been very good. So they can be a little more fearful. Both of them had serious paper shredding problems. So books and papers needed to be put way high up out of beagle reach, which is really high. And, you know, both chewed shoes and did things like that, even though they were, well, Poppy probably was a puppy. She was probably about a year old when we got her, and Percival was about 18 months old when we got him, but they were still very much doing a lot of puppy behaviors for a good year or so. But they're so loving and loyal and fun and wonderful that I don't mind losing a few pairs of shoes and even a few books over it.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about Poppy and how you first took her on, how you worked with her and adopted her out.
Yeah, so, well, she came over in December of 2018 on this rainy night, which sort of became the theme of Poppy's experiences. It's cold, rainy night, which doesn't happen a lot in Southern California. And I went and with the other people who were fostering or adopting the dogs and got her that night. I sort of just hung back and said, well, I'm fostering, so whatever dog is left, if somebody doesn't pick, you know, that'll be the dog I take home and foster, because I'm not adopting, I'm just fostering, so I told myself. And Poppy was one of the more skittish and kind of stuck to the side walls and hit a lot, so she wound up being one of the last ones, and eventually came to me, and I fell in love with her immediately, of course. She's adorable. That's actually her on the cover of the book. That's the real dog.
She is beautiful.
And I had her for about 6 weeks, and I was bringing her into my law office with me and trying to take her out on walks and get her a little socialized. And we were making some progress, and then my paralegal was actually interested in adopting her. And so we said, okay, well, let's do a trial. And she took her for an overnight stay, and unfortunately that is when she took her out walking. That is, a thunderstorm broke out, thunder and lightning and rain, and the dog got scared and somehow twisted out of her harness and ran. Mm. And she wound up in a 1,500-acre wilderness park in the middle of a, by California standards, really bad thunderstorm. And that's where she was lost, as it turned out, for 5.5 days.
Right, right. A long time, especially
yeah.
Given all that she's been through, you know. Because I'm sure that, you know, if we could get into the dog's mind, I'm sure there's some trauma being revisited there. So you were at a Lakers game when you heard that she'd gone missing. What was it you did immediately? How did you get into action here?
So immediately at first, of course, I sort of froze and thought, this cannot be happening. You know, we get the dog all the way over here safe from China, and she gets lost in Riverside, California. This can't be happening. But I was quick to remember that Poppy was wearing a GPS tracker, and the GPS tracker works, you know, there's a phone app for it. So I went to my phone to look and see, and it will show you where they've been. So I could see that before she ran into the wilderness park, she had been racing back and forth across busy streets. So I just looked at Chris and said, that's it, I'm sorry, you know, we have these great seats at the Lakers game, but we're not going to be able to use them. We got to get home. We got to go find this dog. And I was taking screenshots and texting them to my paralegal, who was out trying to find the dog, to show her where the dog went, because, of course, she didn't have the app on her phone. So because of that, we knew that the dog had run into the wilderness park, and we knew roughly where in the middle of the wilderness park she was. But, of course, dogs don't stay on trails, so figuring out how to get there late at night in the dark in pouring rain was a lot more difficult than one would think with the GPS tracker. So we didn't find her that night. Like I said, it took 5.5 days, and eventually the battery died. But the lucky part was, once we started kind of posting on social media and trying to get people to help and to keep an eye out for the dog, somebody put us in touch with two fabulous people, Babs Fry and Mike Noon, both of whom are pet recovery specialists. and they guided us through everything you do when you lose a dog and how to find a lost dog. And I was so amazed by everything they knew and the way they handled it and the things I did not know that I kept saying to them, boy, you guys, this is amazing. You guys should write a book. You guys, people need to know this. You should write a book. And eventually Michael said to me, we don't write books. We catch dogs. And I was like, oh, right. Wait, I write books. I can do this. So I think it was around on the third day I said to Chris, you know, if this has a happy ending, I think I have my third book. Because, like I said, I write about tragedies that happened to me and my dogs with happy endings. So all I needed was the happy ending, and thankfully we got that. I give it away, because who likes to read a dog book if it's not going to have a happy ending or something terrible is going to happen to the dog? So I always let people know it has a happy ending.
Absolutely, yes. I wouldn't have read it if it hadn't had a happy ending.
Exactly, yeah. So my first book is called The Dog Lived and So Will I, and it's still shocking how many times I have to tell people, no, no, it's okay, the dog lived. There in the title.
Yeah. So, and that's the great thing. At the end of the book, you've got a ton of resources there for people to help them find dogs, for organizations that they can get advice from on fostering dogs. So there's a ton of resources at the back here. I read that 15% of pets go missing every year. That's quite a high percentage when you kind of think of dogs. You know, they tend to be homebodies. They like to come back, but it definitely happens that they get lost. One of the things that I thought when I was reading it said, you know, oh, she had a GPS on her. I'm like, oh, great. You know, they're going to find her quickly. But you kept checking it and said that was a mistake because, as you said, the battery died.
Yes. And I did not realize this, because, of course, I was panicked. I wasn't thinking about something as silly as a battery. And I kept checking it and checking it to send these screenshots to Jessica, my paralegal. And that just used up the battery. And so the battery ended up dying, I think it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. She was lost about 6 in the evening, and the battery died at about 1 because I was checking it so much. And I should have just, you know, checked it and then checked it like an hour later to see if she had moved or something like that. But I was panicked and didn't really think about that. So I will give it credit, you know, absolutely. Having the GPS tracker, we did know she had gone well into the middle of the wilderness park, and the odds were good she was going to be staying in there. And she mostly did. She mostly did stay in the wilderness park.
Right. I loved some of the people you ran into. It seemed like most people, we always get odd ducks out there, but most people were quite helpful. You talk about rescue specialists and psychics, a Native American who communes with owls. I mean, people plunged in. They let you, you know, camp out in their gardens and stuff. It must have been heartwarming.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I always say it was like the whole neighborhood came together to help find this little 19-pound beagle. Yeah, so many people were so helpful. We really didn't have too many bad actors. I mean, even people who weren't helpful, you know, probably meant to be helpful. It just wasn't, you know. We had people who, as we were, you know, posting flyers or handing out flyers or talking to people in the surrounding neighborhood, we would have people who, you know, felt the need to tell us that, oh, well, there's coyotes out there. She's never going to survive the coyotes. Which is just not helpful, you know. And it reminded me of when I got diagnosed with breast cancer, and people would tell me about the relative that they had who had the exact same kind of cancer and died.
Right.
Well, that's not helpful. Why are you telling me that?
It's not helpful.
So I kind of did the same thing I did then, just to thank you very much and move along. And but for the most part, yes, absolutely, everybody was helpful. And Babs and Mike, one of the things they said to us is, don't put a reward on your flyer, because people who are going to help a lost dog are going to help a lost dog, whether there's a reward or not. People who want to help, who spot her, they're going to call. They're not just going to, you know, oh, well, there's no reward, never mind. On the other hand, bad actors, if they see a reward, they're going to either chase after the dog because they want the money, and chasing after the dog is bad. The dog's going to run in a panic. Or they're going to call and give you bad information in the off chance that it's correct, and maybe they'll get a reward. And then you end up sort of chasing your tail.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's true, I think, too, because people who do love dogs, you know, I certainly helped people look for their dogs when they've got lost over where we walk on the trail sometimes. So one of the other things I wanted to ask you this because I saw this in the list of tips about, you know, having photos of your dog ready just in case. And you say you should always take a photo from a side view. How so?
Because that's how people are going to see your dog. If when your dog's walking by or walking down the street, they're likely to see the dog from the side. So the markings that are on the side or the size of the dog or whatnot. You know, most of us take cute close-up photos of the dog or the dog curled up sleeping cute and whatnot. And you know, if that's all you have, that's all you have, and you go with that. But if you have a full from the side, that's how people are going to see your dog. That's how they're going to be able to recognize your dog.
Mm.
And that, I thought that was really interesting, too. I happen to have had on my phone a photo where I had Poppy over at a friend's house, very near the canyon that she was lost in. And the dog got up on a little small retaining wall, and she was kind of looking around. So, and it was very cute and scenic. So I took it, and it happened to be from the side in front of the very canyon she got lost in. So, and I took the photo like 2 days before she got lost. So I had pretty much the perfect photo for what we needed to do. But I was surprised by that too. I didn't think of that either. And when you see lost dog photos, sometimes they're terrible photos, or they're just the dog's face, which doesn't give you an idea of the size of the dog or what it might look like when it goes running by you.
Right. That makes perfect sense, Teresa.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You say that most of the things that you would normally think are, you know, things we would do to catch a dog are actually the wrong things to do. And the things that we should do seem counterintuitive. So what was it that surprised you the most that you were told to do?
Not to chase the dog. And that, obviously not to chase the dog, but not to even be out walking around looking for the dog was the most surprising thing to me, because of course that was my instinct and that was the first thing we did. We spent hours in the thunderstorm, probably 5-6 hours, walking the trails in that wilderness park in the rain, calling out to this dog. And what they said to me, which again makes perfect sense once it's said, she said, "That dog is frightened, and to that dog, everyone is a predator." Mm-hmm. And all you did was send 4 predators out into the wilderness looking for her. She's going to see you, hear you, smell you long before you see, hear, or smell her. And she's going to hide.
Yes.
And or she's going to run, and she's going to run in a panic, which means she's going to run into a coyote den or run back out into the street. And so we should have just stayed back, focused on getting all the flyers made and made the correct way, and there's examples of that in the book as well, and getting out in the neighborhood, in the surrounding neighborhood, because on 3 sides of this wilderness park there were homes, and get the signs up there so there were 1,000 pairs of eyes looking for her.
Right.
And the whole idea was to get sightings, and just sightings, don't have anybody run after her or chase her or try to catch her. Just call us and say, "I saw your dog, she was on such and such a street and she was going south," or "I saw her as I was walking through the canyon," because we had a couple of hikers who saw her, "and here's where she was and here's the direction she was headed." From that, they were able to figure out what Poppy's pattern was, because that was the other thing. They said a dog will settle into a pattern. Dogs like patterns, just like humans, and they'll settle into a pattern. Our job was to get enough eyes on her to figure out what that pattern was so that we could set a humane trap.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely correct. It happened. She settled into a pattern. We could figure out where it was. It's painstaking, of course, and it was 5.5 days. It felt like 5.5 months, but it worked.
Right.
She survived.
Right.
Yeah.
And she came back a changed dog, you say. She seemed more confident.
Yeah, and they tell me that's not uncommon. It's an experience for the dog. You know, she's out there. She survived. She now knows what she has with the comfortable warm bed and, you know, 2 meals a day. Yeah, she came back much, much more confident, not nearly as frightened of things. She's still, you know, a little on the shy side. She's not crazy about meeting new people, but eventually she will come up to a new person and be okay. Where before she just would have crawled under my bed and not, you know, not come out to meet anybody. And now she's a pretty confident dog. Yeah, it was amazing.
It's an amazing story. And as I said, you know, earlier, it's so well told and so well written. I loved the story. I don't know if you heard this, but there was a huge story, I don't know, a couple of years ago now, up here in Washington, where a woman actually quit her job and spent 57 days searching for her dog in Montana.
I remember that.
Do you remember that one? Yeah, and that ended well too. So, which is why I'm sharing that one too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised they never did.
A recovery specialist did for me when I was out there looking. They would keep me encouraged by telling me good stories with good endings. They never told me a bad one.
Yeah. What did you learn about yourself during this experience? Because it's a unique kind of experience.
Yeah, I think I learned. I mean, I knew I was a little bit stubborn. Now I know I'm really stubborn. Because I was determined to find this dog and to do right by her. So I think I lasted a little longer than I would have given myself credit for, being out in the wilderness and sitting there for hours on end in the rain, you know, waiting for the dog. Because that's one of their key things, is, you know, give the dog a way to find her way back by, you know, smells and being just present and quiet and not chasing her. So I think I learned a lot about my own fortitude in this experience. I already knew I was a crazy dog lady, so this just absolutely confirmed it.
Well, let's hope you don't have to go through another experience like this for your next book,
right,
Teresa.
Right. Just to be safe, I've started writing fiction. Three is good. I can move on to other writing. I mean, I love writing about dogs. I just don't love living through the tragedy.
Right. Well, as I said, there are tons of resources at the back of the book, and we're almost at the end of our time allowed here. So I just recommend people, you know, get the book and read it and see those resources at the back if they're interested in maybe adopting or fostering. Some really good work went into this book. Great storytelling. Final thought you'd like to leave listeners with today, Teresa? I know they can find out more about you at your website, which is teresarine.com.
Yeah, teresarine.com. There's no H in Teresa. It's in Rhine, R-H-Y-N-E. I always like to point out the appendix in the back, because there is a lot of information there for finding a lost dog, for fostering, for even, you know, like I said, how to put the flyers up and whatnot. So I hope I can save somebody a little bit of heartache if they ever have their dog go missing. There's some resources there. And the other thing is, what they kept saying to me too, is you don't give up hope. You just keep looking. And it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And but it's entirely possible. I mean, her odds seemed completely against her, and we found her. So keep looking, keep loving the dogs, and absolutely foster, adopt, rescue.
Well, thanks, Teresa. Thanks for all that you do for dogs and for good storytelling.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here, Vicky. Thank you.
And the book again is called Poppy in the Wild, A Lost Dog, 1500 Acres of Wilderness and the Dogged Determination That Brought Her Home. And I love that there are photographs in the middle of this book too of dogs. So you've got it all there. And I just want to say a big thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. We appreciate you spending this time with us. We have more than 700 podcasts archived at conversationslive.net. And if you have questions or feedback on today's show, that's where you can find me also, conversationslive.net. Until next week, stay healthy, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.